Sure, I'll talk. How you guys doing?
Doing pretty good.
Doing all right.
Good, excellent. Well, I'm hanging out here watching the Pirates hold on to a slim one-run lead against the Cardinals.
There
you go.
That's good news.
You're coming good.
Is that
through
your
good,
team,
so.
the Pirates?
Yeah, they're in Pittsburgh. They've been so terrible for so many years, and now they're finally half decent, so they're
Well,
worth watching.
there are so many teams that have been terrible over the years. I don't think we can judge one another.
All right, so if something's classified, I'll just pass on it.
There you go.
Or just say spoilers and tell us anyways. It's up to
Spoiler alert.
you.
Exactly, yeah.
To another Comic Pop Visits brought to you by Comic Pop Library. I'm Richard, along with
April,
Louise,
and today we are visiting with Joshua Bellin, the author of Survival Colony 9. And we appreciate you coming on this evening, Joshua.
Thanks, glad to be here.
And we have to mention Rebecca Gross was able to coordinate this with us, so thank you to her with Wow. Going to be one of those evenings. We want to say thank you to Rebecca from SoCal PR. She actually coordinated the author visit with us tonight, so we appreciate her doing all that. And again, thank you for working with us, Joshua.
Happy to do it. Happy to be here.
One of the first things I want to ask is, when you were thinking up of this book, you have the apocalyptic desert theme, and the first thing that popped into my head as a sci-fi person was Mad Max. So was this kind of in the back of your mind when you were working on this novel?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't think it was. It's a little hard to say what was in the back of my mind, but it very well could be, because I had watched Mad Max, rewatched it actually, maybe, I don't know, 6 months or so before I started writing this. So it's quite possible that desert setting had carried over from viewing that, because you're right, it definitely has that same sort of vibe and that same sort of feel. So I think there's probably connections there. You know, it's funny because so much of what you read and what you see pours into what you write. And so I would guess that was one of the things that was in the back of my mind.
One of those subconscious things there.
Yeah, exactly.
And were you a sci-fi fan to begin with, or is this just what came out at this point in time?
No, I mean, I've always been into fantasy and sci-fi. When I was a kid, especially, I was into fantasy and sci-fi movies. I was a big fan of what in that day when I was growing up, you know, the stop-motion animation, Ray Harryhausen and Willis O'Brien. Then when Star Wars came out, you know, that was, I think I was 12 or so when that came out. So that was really influential to me. And it was probably through film that I started reading some of the literature. That was what kind of drove me there. And so I'd say I've always been into fantasy and sci-fi. And so that was definitely something. Some of my like earliest writing when I was just a teenager was in the fantasy and sci-fi realm. And then when I found my way back to writing fiction, you know, much later in life, that was where I sort of gravitated. So that's definitely been something that's been a main interest of mine.
Yeah, and with you talking about, you know, fantasy and sci-fi playing such a big role, has that been the majority of the genres you've written in, or are you kind of branching out a little and
trying well, other things.
Trying yeah, different I mean, genres, yeah.
Yeah, my journey, I guess, to publishing fiction has been kind of all over the place. I mean, I sort of thought of myself as a fiction writer when I was younger, maybe in high school and college. And then I went into non-fiction writing, academic writing, when I got a PhD. But I did manage to write one of the books I wrote in one of the academic books I wrote was about monsters. It was about fantasy film. So, you know, that was me sort of always kind of finding my way back into those genres that I've loved. And then when I made the decision maybe 5-6 years ago to return to writing fiction, science fiction and fantasy were always there. I mean, I dabbled in some other things. I wrote some what I guess I would call literary fiction, contemporary, realistic kind of stuff. But fantasy and sci-fi have always drawn me back because I think that's been where I've really felt most at home and just been most excited about. You know, I sort of enjoy it the most. I enjoy reading it. It's fun. You know, it exercises your imagination so much. I've just always really loved it. So I'd say it's definitely been my focus, you know, throughout my writing career.
This story in particular, excuse me, this story in particular, Survival Colony 9, to me, you kind of mentioned Star Wars already. It kind of almost feels like that too, because it feels like you're dropped right into the middle of a story.
Mm-hmm.
Was this planned, and are you looking at possibly doing future novels or prequel novels to make a bigger story and a bigger universe for this world?
Yeah, there's definitely more to be told here. I mean, this novel, I wanted to drop people right into the middle of it because I wanted readers to be sort of like my main character who suffers from memory loss, doesn't know where he is, doesn't know what's going on. And so I thought that idea of disorienting readers the same way my main character is disoriented, that would make sense. I wanted readers to sort of gradually be putting the pieces together the same way the narrator is. But at the same time, I don't want people to be lost. And so, of course, they learn along with the narrator what's going on. But there's so much more to the world than my narrator, Query, the 14-year-old with amnesia. There's so much more to that world than he glimpses, even in Survival Colony 9, that there's definitely other books that I have completed a sequel to it that kind of opens up the world, shows you more of it, things that he didn't glimpse in the first one. A lot of backstory that he isn't aware of, both his own backstory, personal backstory, but also the larger history of the world and how the world came to be the way it is. You know, you mentioned this desert landscape. Well, how did the world get that way? He only has the sketchiest idea of how that happened. And so in the sequel, I'm sort of filling in more of that and painting a much fuller picture of the world. So yeah, there's a lot more, I think, to tell, a lot more to this story than is told in the first one. The first story, you know, I see it as complete, but at the same time, I think the world is bigger than the main character could glimpse in that first novel.
Yeah, you obviously just mentioned a second book. Is there, can you talk about a release date on it or something, or can you give us something?
I wish I could, but there isn't one that's been scheduled yet, so I don't have a firm release date on that. So that's we're gonna have to wait on that.
But you are working on it, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, I definitely, because you know, I just, like I said, I just feel, I always felt right from the start that this story was complete unto itself. It sort of, you know, it tells a story of this teen boy discovering who he is and dealing with the issues in his colony, and also fighting off this monstrous threat, the creatures that I call the Scaldi that are in this world. But at the same time, right from the get-go, I saw this as something that could extend beyond a single book. And so that's stuff that I'm definitely working on.
Yeah, you know, we keep bringing up the main character and kind of some of his traits and personality and all that. With your characters, do you tend to take from
people you know,
or mirror them off of people, you know, or are they pretty much original?
I'd say that a little bit of both. I mean, you know, any time you're creating a character, your people who you know, aspects of your own personality, you know, those things are going to find their way into the people you know. But to give just one example, the character of Query's father, Layman, who's this very kind of authoritarian, almost dictatorial leader of Query's survival colony, My dad was nothing like that, thank goodness. you know, I don't know how well I would have dealt with that. And so that really didn't, you know, I don't think that that character was modeled so much on individuals I knew, certainly not on family members I knew. It was just that it seemed right for the scene, right for the novel, especially given the things that Querry is struggling with. It seemed to make sense to me that he was going to have this very domineering, overbearing father figure who he has to come to terms with. So I'd say that certainly little bits and pieces of people I know do find their way into the characters, but it's really, I think, more of a creative act and, you know, just sort of digging deep and trying to discover what makes sense for the world I've created and for the story that I'm building.
When you're developing the characters throughout, not just Querry, but all of them, were you kind of worried because, like you said, you're doing it with Querry and you're discovering stuff as he's going on? So your character development is stretched out almost through the whole book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of unusual for a book. And were you kind of hesitant about that, or was that your plan all along to take that reader on that journey?
I guess I wasn't hesitant. I guess that I definitely had the idea that you would slowly, as a reader, and gradually discover little bits and pieces of his world, and eventually you'd put the pieces together the same way that he did. So I guess I felt comfortable with that decision. One thing that was a little bit more difficult to figure out was, you know, Querry sometimes, because he has this radical memory loss, there will be times when he's misled. There will be times when he thinks something is going on that actually isn't going on, and he'll discover subsequently the truth behind what he thought was happening. So that was actually the more, to me, kind of the more risky part, you know, kind of intentionally misleading readers, right? You know, okay, I'm going to plant some false evidence that readers might go along with for a while, and they might think that that's what's happening because that's what Querry thinks is happening. But then they learn, sometimes I think to their surprise or even shock, that what appeared to be is not actually what's going on. I guess I was a little, I wouldn't say I was worried, but I just asked myself, well, how are readers going to respond to this? And I just, at the end of the day, I hope that readers feel like, well, okay, you know, you kind of misled me a little bit here, but you did it for a reason. You know, you did it purposely, and right. It's kind of a pleasant surprise when you discover what's actually been happening.
Yeah, and continuing with the character's theme and bringing it up more and more, did you ever have, you know, a bit more of a liking to a character than the others? Because I know that can happen. There's one that always, you know, pokes out to you.
Like a character who was sort of a favorite, or one that I really sort of developed kind of a close connection to?
Who was the last child?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that this is going to sound kind of strange, because sometimes I really like I like all my characters. You know, I identify with them, let's say, and I sympathize with them. And I try to make sure that no matter who it is, they're acting in ways that make sense, in ways that are comprehensible, so that I don't want to have just like some kind of cardboard character who's kind of a stereotype or whatever. So I want to make sure that I get inside their heads and understand what makes them tick. And what that means is that sometimes I gravitate toward and am interested in the villains in the story. So like Yav, who's one of the teens who torments Querry and who has all kinds of conflicts with Querry, I really sort of liked him, even though he's a jerk, because I was trying to understand, well, what makes him a jerk? You know, why is he that way? What's going on in his head? So, you know, because I didn't want him, as I said, just to be a stereotype. Oh, he's the kid who torments Querry for no good reason, right? So digging into him and sort of trying to figure out what made him tick got me closer to him. And so sometimes that is what happens in my writing, is that I find myself, because it's a little harder, it's a little more of an effort to learn something about the characters who are less your, you know, protagonists and more the villains. Sometimes I find myself getting closer to them.
Just a quick question on the character Querry.
Mm-hmm.
With his name, were you intentionally doing a play on words since he's trying to find out about his past?
Yeah, I picked up on that super fast.
Yeah, you know, and the funny thing about that is that I had written another novel before I wrote this. I'd written a novel, it was a fantasy, and it really kind of didn't go anywhere. And But I got to a point where I thought I might start sending it out, and so I was working on query letters, right? And so I was writing that word. I was typing that word on the computer, you know, Q-U-E-R-Y. And I looked at that, and I said, huh, that might be kind of an interesting name. And at first, I was actually spelling it with only the one R. But then I was like, no, that's ridiculous. You know, I've got to do something to make it not just that word. So, yeah, when I added in the second R, I was like, well, that still looks like a name, but definitely a play on the fact that he's got lots of questions about himself and lots of questions about his world. Yeah, so you picked up on that. I'm glad.
Yes.
So do you have all your characters thought out, or do you let them come out while you write the story, or how does that work for you?
Yeah, I definitely discover them as I write, because I'm one of the worst planners in the world. I really am not good at that. You know, a lot of writers, and I give them credit for this, a lot of writers write these elaborate outlines and, you know, flow charts and character maps and all kinds of stuff. I just don't do that. And, you know, maybe it would be better if I did, but I just kind of, you know, start writing. I have a few little ideas. I've got some names. I've got a setting. I've got a basic story. I start writing, and so what that means is that the characters, I really discover them as I'm writing them. You know, what's the complexity to them, and their histories, and their conflicts, and their sorrows, and everything else, just really sort of develop as I'm writing, which does mean sometimes that, you know, I have to do a lot of backtracking once I've got a draft to make sure everything is coherent and consistent and makes sense. But to me, it's kind of more fun that way, because that's how I discover other real people. You know, you don't have something mapped out with them. You meet somebody and you learn about them gradually and as you get to know them. And so the process of writing a character is more like that too, that I'm discovering them as I'm creating them. And sometimes, of course, that means that they'll do things that almost surprise me. I'm like, you know, obviously I wrote it, but at the same time, it's like, wow, I didn't know they were going to do that. You know, and there it is. And that's kind of fun, too.
When you were working with the reveals, did you ever get writing along and you did a reveal and then you went a little bit further and then you're like, well, maybe this isn't the right time for this reveal, and you went back and not just your editors kind of working with you, but did you edit yourself on some of the reveals?
Oh, definitely. I shuffled things a lot. When I had written, I guess, about half of it, so it's 20 chapters, I guess I was about 10 chapters in, I decided that I should plan out sort of loosely what was going to play out for the remaining half. So I jotted down like one or two sentence chapter summaries for what I imagined was going to happen for the rest of the book. And then I ended up writing them, and of course it didn't turn out at all the way I had planned it, right? You know, it didn't happen. But what that meant was that I did end up moving chapters around and replacing where key moments in the story emerged. And there was a lot of that, more so on my own part than my editor. My editor did make some suggestions like that, and I shuffled some things based on her advice. But I would say that I did a lot more of that myself before the editor even saw it. And again, that's kind of a function of writing the way I do, with not so much planning beforehand. And then after a draft is complete, trying to make sure that everything fits together and falls where it belongs in the story arc.
Okay, cool. On your few characters, there was a brief love interest. Very brief.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was strange.
It was kind of like we're leading up, and you kind of alluded to it because she was with somebody else and getting with him, and then it was explained later on what was actually happening during that time. But was there something in the back of your mind that you were wanting to say, there's love interests in so many books right now, you want to do something different and have that play, or you just didn't feel like writing a love interest into the story?
Well, I definitely, you know, so that's the situation with Query and Cora. So Cora's there as kind of a love interest, and she's she's one of those characters who really developed through the course of the writing. She was initially going to be just a very, very minor character, almost background, almost to give Query some sort of object of affection. But then I was like, no, that doesn't work. I don't want her just to be this stereotype or this symbol or something. So I developed her character a little more and gave her more of a history and more of a story. But I never really, and I wanted there to be a suggestion that there was some romantic interest between the two of them and that something might develop. But at the same time, yeah, I guess I'm a little bit resistant to how much young adult literature is driven by romantic interests, and especially romantic triangles. I've read so much of it, and a lot of it is very well handled and really good and really interesting, but it's omnipresent. It's everywhere. And I decided that this story isn't really about that. You know, obviously these are teenagers, and they can have some interest in members of the opposite sex or the same sex or whatever. That's great. But that wasn't really the story. That wasn't really the heart of the story that I wanted to tell. So that was definitely a conscious decision to put that a little bit more in the background and not make that a driving force of the narrative. It's not a driving part of Query's quest. There are other things that are primary to him. And that's just something that's there, but it's not something that drives the events so much as it does in a lot of YA.
So we're not going to expect the next notebook out of you then? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
Yeah, I guess so.
I was so looking forward to it. Oh, man.
You said you've already worked on the second book and pretty much have it in its final stages. Are you going to kind of jump around a little bit too and do other stories and kind of come back to this world? That way it doesn't get too stale for you.
Yeah, I feel like I want to complete the story that I set out to tell. And once that's done, which I imagine it as being three books, once that's complete, I definitely want to move on to other things. I started a list as I was working on this, because, you know, this is any project like this is going to take a long, long time. I mean, it was 2-3 years planning, writing, submitting, revising, and so forth, this first book. And then it was, you know, not quite so long to do book two and then to start to work on book three. But still, overall, I've been working on Query's story for, I don't know, 3-4 years, probably about 4 years total. And so during the writing of all this, I've been jotting down ideas for other stories that I want to get to. But it's like, no, I can't get to that yet because I got to finish this one. But so now I've got lots and lots of stuff. Some of it is sci-fi. Much of it is YA, but not all of it. And there are lots of other things that I want to work on. One of the ones that's floating to the top is like an alternative history. So it's got some fantastical elements to it, but at the same time, it's history. So it's going to be based in and grounded in actual facts and actual data and actual occurrences. And it deals with John Brown and his raid on Harper's Ferry and then some of the events that led up to the Civil War. Because I'm really interested in that period of history, and I've had some ideas of putting that into a novel form. But the nature of who I am, I've always wanted to tell. I don't want to tell things just exactly the way they are. You know, I want there to be a little bit of a fantastical element to it, perhaps. So the alt history, you know, gives me the opportunity to do that. And then once I'm done with that, like I said, I've got a list literally of like, oh gosh, I think it's like 12 items, you know, and I'm like, oh, I got to write these books, you know, am I going to have enough time even to do it? But they're all there. So the ideas are there.
So you keep a journal where you keep all your ideas at? And
yeah, I jot some things down. I wish I could call it a journal. If it was a little bit more formal, it would be a journal. It's more like scraps of paper and things that I stuff in file cabinets and, you know, whatever's handy. But it's ideas.
Yeah. Well, you kept mentioning, you know, it takes, you know, 2 years or 3-4 years even to get a book going and actually get the book out there. And I know there are a lot of people out there that aspire to be an author, you know, and you know, how hard is it really? I mean,
I guess to put it in perspective, I would say that I have been in one way or another dreaming of publishing a novel since I was about 8. I wrote my first thing that I thought of as a novel when I was around 8. I can't place it exactly in time, but I still have it. I still have this little scrap of paper where I was using a manual typewriter in those days. It was my mom's manual typewriter. And so I started, you know, I didn't know how to type, so I was just, you know, plucking out this little story. And it lasted for about a page and a half because, you know, I was 8 and I couldn't make it a novel. But I envisioned it that way. And thought of it as something that was going to have chapters and a whole long story arc and everything else. And then that didn't happen. And then so in my teen years, I was working on novels, some of them completed, some of them not. Throughout my 20s, I kept working on that, sort of got sidetracked by the academic writing. But then in my 40s, came back to fiction. And now here I am at the age of 49, So about 40 years after that initial idea that I could be a writer, about to publish my first novel. So, you know, it's definitely a lot of work and it's a lot of development. Looking at it one way, you could say, well, I just, certain things got in the way, you know, the academic writing or whatever got in the way. But another way of looking at it is that it took me that length of time to develop my craft to the point where I could publish a novel. And I think a lot of people may feel like, well, you know, you're going to sit down, you're going to bang something out, and next year you're going to be published. And for some people, it works out that way, which is great and more power to them. But I think for the majority of writers who I've talked to, it's a long, long process with a lot of failure, if you want to call it that, or at least a lot of disappointment and things that don't see the light of day, things that don't get completed, don't get accepted. You know, you've got a whole file drawer full of rejection letters or whatever, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's if that happens to you know, if one is a writer and that's happening to a person, I don't think that person should feel, oh, man, there's something wrong with me. You know, I'm never going to make this. I think that's most writers' stories, you know, that it's just that's what it takes. And I think you just got to accept that as part of the territory.
With this current novel coming up, I know it's going to be released in September.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an exact date in September yet, or is...
Yes, it is September 23rd, so it's a little less than a month, which is, you know, super exciting. When I have a countdown on my website, www.joshuadavidbellin.com, and when I saw it go to 30 days, I was like, oh my, it's a month, wow, you know, it's only a month away. So yeah, September 23rd, it'll be coming out.
What? Oh.
September 23rd.
Is this the second book?
No, this is the first book.
Oh, the first book, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I was still, yeah, thinking on that second book. I'm like, you lied to me.
Let's not put the cart before the horse. Let's do the first book, and then we'll get to the second book.
When you were writing, or when you're writing anything at all, what's the atmosphere that you usually like? Do you like it quiet and business-like, or do you like to have fun, have music in the background, and Cheetos by your computer keyboard to chew on?
Do you like candles?
No, I don't do candles. I don't do Cheetos. I don't do. A lot of people do music, like they put together a playlist, you know, and that's going to be what they listen to, you know, on their, you know, on their computer or on their iPod or whatever while they're doing stuff. I need a quiet environment. I really do. You know, traffic noise outside, that's okay. But anything else, anything more than that, you know, TV or radio in the background, kids screaming in the background, you know, whatever. it's not gonna work. I just need to focus. You know, maybe that's a function of being in my 40s or something, but I need to have quiet. So usually it means I end up doing most of my writing on Fridays, which is a day that I don't teach, summers when the kids are at camp or before their school year has ended, you know, that sort of thing. And just in times when I have little breaks, you know, that's when I'm going to do my writing, because I just really need like a distraction-free environment. Like if I even have another window open on the computer, you know, if I've got like my browser open in addition to the document that I'm working on, forget it, because something there is going to distract me. You know, a message is going to pop up and it's going to, right, you know, and I'm going to pay attention to it, and I'm not going to, and that takes me out of the sort of spell that you need to be in, or that I need to be in to write. So yeah, it's got to be almost entirely distraction free.
Well, if that's how it is for you, are you, do you like shut yourself into your office or wherever you write when you do write? Do you just ignore everybody and you're like a hermit crab?
Like you just hide in the closet, turn off the lights and everything.
Yeah, I need to have a man cave. I really don't. You know, I've basically just got my desk and my computer are just in my bedroom. But, you know, that was the way the house worked out, and that was where we could put things. But yeah, I really, you know, I close the door. I tell the kids don't you dare bother me if they're around. You know, if they're not around. Yeah, I know. I just basically shut people out. Yeah, you know, that has some trying to write while you've also got two very active and lively and engaging kids, you know, that's another issue too. But sometimes I just have to do it. It's just got to be like, guys, you know, this is my time to do this, and we'll go out and throw the ball around after I'm done with this.
Are you like some other authors that you try to have a set goal when you sit down to write so many pages, or are you just free form and free flowing?
Yeah, I used to try to set goals. It was the same time that I was trying to do the planning thing. You know, I was going to create outlines and I was going to be so darn organized. But so I would set goals. I'd say, well, I'm going to get 1,000 or 2,000 words a day or something. That seemed like a reasonable goal. But, you know, that just made me feel bad when I didn't reach my goal. So you know, I just said, well, you know, if I get 200 words today, that's 200 words I didn't have yesterday. So I'm a little bit more relaxed about it now. As long as I produce something when I sit down to write, and I don't do it every day because I just can't. There's too many other things going on. But as long as I produce something every time I sit down to write, even if that something is a page or a paragraph, I'm like, okay, I made progress. You know, it does mean that my drafting and revising and all that is probably a little slower than some people's. I know that some people are rigorous with that, like 2,000 words a day, and they're also rigorous with writing every day. You know, and that's great if they can do it. But I've just found, given all the other stuff that's going on in my life, not going to happen. And there's no point in feeling bad about it.
And it is kind of a, you know, if you're not feeling it, you're not really feeling it, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
there are days where, you know, sometimes there will be a day where I won't write because there's a real sort of reason that I won't write. Or I shouldn't say a real reason, but there's something else that I have to do. So I'm grading student papers or something, or you know, I'm on vacation or whatever. But then there will be other days where I'm just not feeling it. You know, it's just not, you know, the creativity is not flowing for whatever reason, nothing that I can identify. You know, maybe it's because I'm having a bad day, or maybe it's not. You know, maybe it's because I'm having a good day and the good stuff that's going on is interfering with the...
You have to be depressed to write. I cry and look at all of my rejected letters.
Exactly, right. Oh, man, yeah. And so that if that happens, that's just what you got to, at least for me, I just say, well, this is not going to be a writing day. And that's the way it is. I'll go out and I'll have fun and I'll do something else and just let another day be a writing day.
So you don't beat yourself to force yourself to do it.
Yeah, try not to, because okay. it's counterproductive. When I do it, when I force myself to try to write when I'm not in a writing frame of mind, I end up either producing nothing or I end up producing garbage, which I then have to just either completely throw out, or it's going to be revised so heavily that I might as well not even have written it. And so more often than not, right, it just gets me down. Okay. I'd rather be up. I'd rather feel like, wow, I accomplished something than the reverse.
Mm-hmm. Well, we just talked about how when you don't feel like writing, do you ever get random sparks of, you know, creativity? Because sometimes I'll be like sitting in bed like 2 a.m. and I'll randomly have the energy to go do a specific thing. So do you just have these random itches at times to go write?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you're right, it sometimes happens at the worst times, you know, whether it's right, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning when I could drag myself out of bed, but I'm so tired at that point that I don't know whether what I produced would be gibberish or not. Or it'll be like I'll be at work. You know, I'll be in the middle of teaching a class, right? And this great idea will pop into my head. And I'm like, well, what am I going to do? Say to my students, sorry, guys, not going to happen today. You go learn on your own. I'm going to go write something.
I'm sure your students wouldn't mind.
No, you should just make them jot down your ideas.
There you go.
Like front row, like, all right, write this down word for word.
That's right. I never thought about this. I've got a whole workforce.
That's right. There, you
know, unpaid, and I can just use these guys. Why did I think of that?
Like, you get extra credit.
Just don't let them know they're helping you write the story.
To get back into the story itself, Survivor Colony 9, you kind of mentioned this is going to be a trilogy for Query. Are you going to try to do a kind of like, again, to mention Star Wars again, do a prequel trilogy and maybe a post trilogy? Because like you mentioned earlier, you're going to get into the Scaldi a little bit more, but I could see you doing another full trilogy just on how they came about and how the war came about as well, and that be a like a prequel trilogy. Is that something you're leaning towards, or once the trilogy's done, it's done?
No, to be perfectly honest, that is something where, you know, sort of depending on how the book does and any, you know, possible sequels, how they do. I've thought about it because, you know, Query is living 50 years or so after the wars have ended. and the world has been devastated and it's the way it is. And so lots of things have been lost. And one of the key things that has been lost is memory. And so people don't really remember, because a lot of people died in the wars. Some of the very oldest people who might have points of contact with the time before the wars, they've either kind of shut down entirely and don't want to talk about it, or there's just very few of them left. So, right, Query and really everybody in his world has limited knowledge of what produced that world. So, yeah, it has definitely occurred to me, wouldn't it be interesting to tell that story that led up to this, and how did it get to be the way it is? So that's kind of in the way back of my mind, but I'm sort of holding off on that to see how things go. Because, you know, yeah, if people sort of are really into it and would like to hear that story, I'd love to tell it. But, you know, that kind of has to evolve based on the reception of this book.
Okay, because when I was reading it, that was always in the back of my mind, because you had the older woman that was kind of the historian for the group.
Right, right.
And I could see her being the character and, you know, her life throughout the war. And you never really mentioned what happened, or you never really said how the Skaldi came about, whether they were an invasion force from outer space or a product of our own Earth. If this is Earth, I'm assuming it's Earth.
Well, I'll just say, so far as that one part of of your question, whether this is Earth, when I was done with the manuscript, I went through it and I searched for Earth or any forms of Earth, you know, unearthly, unearthed, you know, anything that would have Earth in it. And I got rid of them all.
Right.
Because I said, well, you know, maybe this is Earth. Maybe this isn't Earth. You know, it's a world with humans on it.
Okay.
Yeah, you know. Could be Earth, but I decided that mattered less than, you know, what was going on and the story that was being told. But to answer the other part of your question, I've definitely decided that if I did do something that was like a prequel, yeah, Query wouldn't be his story at all. You know, it wouldn't be like an earlier part of his life.
Right.
It would be It would be 50 years before or 100 years before or something like that. You know, with a whole different cast of characters and, you know, possibly, like you mentioned, that old woman, you know, if it's 50 years ago when she's a young woman, you know, right. She might be the narrator or she might be one of the characters. But for the most part, it's kind of like James Dashner's Maze Runner series.
Okay.
And then he did a prequel to that called, I think it was The Kill Order.
Right.
And it was interesting. There's like a tiny little prologue that has the character that uses the same characters that are in the Maze Runner trilogy. But then all the rest of that novel, that prequel, is new characters and people who are not in the Maze Runner. And I liked that. I thought that was really cool of him, that he was introducing this whole new cast of characters who had a whole different experience than the characters in the Maze Runner trilogy. Okay. So that's definitely the way I would go.
You could do it like Ender's Game and just write about everyone and everything and just put random books out.
That's too ambitious for me.
Good Lord.
Hard, you know, he just, I don't know, he just is, can
he
endlessly
just kept
produce.
Going, yeah.
I know, it's unreal.
Never say never, though. Never say never. If you're having fun,
yeah,
have
that's
fun.
True. That is true. And it is fun, you know, writing this stuff is a lot of fun.
So that's good to hear. So it's not a job, it is fun for you?
It definitely is fun. You know, it's definitely, I mean, it's work, obviously, you know, and there are days, like I said, you know, when it's not going so well, and then it feels like work. But when the ideas are flowing, and when you're, you know, realizing what a complex kind of world you're creating. I mean, creating a world is fun. it's you know, the chance to create, like, you know, we've mentioned the Skaldi a couple times. The chance to create an entirely new life form, you know, and define what it can do. And figure out how it relates to other life forms, you know. That's just a lot of fun. You know, that's not something you get to do in your everyday life.
I am your God.
Pretty much.
I was trying to stay away from that word, but yeah, okay.
If you insist.
Right, okay, oh, sure, that's who I'll be.
Just to kind of wrap it up, because I know you've taken your time out of your schedule, so we definitely appreciate that. But with a book coming out, I know you mentioned you're an instructor, a professor. Are you going to have time to go out on a tour? Is that going to come later on for your book, or how is that going to be established?
Okay. So here's the story with that. I am a professor, and I am supposedly smart. I have a PhD. that's all kinds of stuff. I could have taken a sabbatical this semester, but okay. I totally spaced out on the deadline. And so I missed it. And then I was like, and now I'm looking at all this stuff that I've got to do. And I'm like, boy, wouldn't it have been nice to not be teaching during the semester that my book is coming out and be able to go on tour and to do signings and whatever else. I am doing some, you know, I'm based in Pittsburgh, so I'm doing some stuff in Pittsburgh. I've got a launch party planned. Pittsburgh has a big comic book convention that happens every year. So I'm going to be there signing books. I am going to be going to, I just found out today, I'm going to the New York Comic Con.
Oh, so that's, very nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, I've never been there. So yeah, but it looks really cool. So I'm going to do that in October. So that'll be fun. And there will be, you know, some little things at local libraries and bookstores and stuff, mostly in this area. But yeah, nothing, no sort of big world tour, but definitely some appearances and some signings, which is, you know, going to be another part of the fun of having a debut novel published.
Okay. So, and just keep track of your website and you'll post dates up there.
Definitely on my website. If you're interested and you know, if I'm in the area, I post anytime I've got, in fact, I got to do that. I've got to jot down, probably once we're done right now, I'll probably add the thing about New York Comic Con. I mean, I literally just found out like 10 minutes before we had this interview.
So cool.
So yeah it was really exciting. So yeah, there's always stuff on my website. And you can see, you know, if you want to see where I'm going to be, what I'm going to be doing. And if you could make it to any of these appearances, that would be great.
Okay. So, well, we won't be
able
to.
You guys won't be there, but you know.
We are so poor.
We will be there, don't worry about it.
We'll be there in spirit.
There you go.
Hey, that's good enough for me.
And we'll have your link back to your webpage. So when we post the interview, also when we do the review, we'll have the links back to your webpage as well as your Facebook page. I assume you have a Facebook page as well. So
I do. Yep.
So definitely. We'll have those links provided for everybody.
All right. That'll be awesome.
One of the things we do with authors and other artists that we interview to give backlinks for you in future podcasts is if they are agreeable to do a bumper for us, we let them do that. Then if you're interested, we definitely love to have you do that for us.
Wait, sorry, the audio wasn't real good right there, so I didn't quite hear what you said.
What we do for our normal podcasts is we have the people we interview do bumpers so that we can put your links in the description so that more people can get back to you. And we were wondering if you would be willing to do one for us.
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's just a simple, my name's Joshua Bellin and the author of Colony 9 and Survive Colony 9. And you're listening to Comic Pop Library. Or
yeah, sure.
Embellish or not embellish how you want. Whatever.
And depending on how good your memory is, you got multiple people there that I didn't know about. Depending on how good your memory is, some people want to write it down. Some people just do it from memory. So are you good with memory or do you want to take a moment to write it down real fast?
I'm probably better with writing it down. So basically it's just, you know, I'm Joshua Bellin, author of Survival Colony 9. And this is Comic Pop Library. And then, you know, some other stuff about the book or about my...
Anything you would like to do, just...
Yep.
You know, you're listening to Comic Pop Library, and then if you want to embellish anything after that, that's fine as well.
It's whatevs.
But you know, I better write this down because I'm probably not gonna, I'm probably not going to do this right.
Don't,
so
don't feel bad. You're not the you're not the only one in that boat.
Okay,
that's the simple version. If like April said, if you want to embellish on it, you're more than welcome to.
I love that word because it reminds me for some reason of like. Like studs, you know, like glitter, and like
bling.
Yeah, which is weird because I'm not that person. I'm not that bling everything. It's strange.
Okay, I think I will. I think I will do it just probably without a whole lot of embellishment.
That's A-okay.
Not a problem.
And so why don't I? So you want me to just do this right now, and then you can.
Yeah,
I'll count you in here real fast. In 3, 2, 1.
This is Joshua David Bellin, author of the young adult science fiction adventure Survival Colony 9, which debuts September 23rd of this year, and you're listening to Comic Pop Library.
All right, that will work. Thank you,
yes,
sir.
It will.
All right, thank you.
We again thank you for coming on as well. We also want to again thank Rebecca from SoCal Public PR. I'm going to say publications all the time. But she's been really good with us and getting us your novel to preview. So we thank her for that. And for anybody out there that's listening, if you're interested in a sci-fi, it's kind of a mystery novel as well, since it is a discovery of who Quarry is. Be sure to pick up Joshua's novel, Survival Colony 9. We have ours on order already for our library. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. He already says he's got the second one in the racks, so he can get that ready to come out in a future date. So definitely support him. I think you'll enjoy the book. So
yeah.
But Joshua, again, thank you very much. I hope we didn't take too much of your time tonight.
Nope, not at all. This was a lot of fun. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
And if you in the future have anything else coming out,
let us know.
Let us know. We'll put it on our blog, or if you want to come back on and do just a short little podcast just telling us what's coming out, we'll be happy to do it for you. So
I will definitely do that.
Okay, just give us an email. We'll do that for you.
All right, great.
You enjoy the rest of your evening, sir.
Thanks, you too.
All right, all right.
Bye-bye. Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.